I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Haiti's international airport was shut down after gangs opened fire at a commercial flight landing in Port-au-Prince. The shooting Monday prompted some airlines to temporarily suspend operations as the country swore in a new interim prime minister. Firefights between gangs and police broke out in other parts of Haiti's capital. Rounds of gunfire echoed through the streets as heavily armed officers ducked behind walls and civilians ran in terror. Haiti's prime minister was ousted after just 6 months in the role. Reuters correspondent Rachel Judah has more.
The country's transitional presidential council appointed entrepreneur and former Senate candidate Alix Didier Fils-Aimé to replace Gary Conille on Monday. The shakeup is the latest blow to political stability in the Caribbean nation, which is struggling through a severe security and humanitarian crisis. Armed gangs have gained control of most of the capital, Port-au-Prince, and have expanded to nearby regions, fueling hunger and forcing hundreds of thousands from their homes. Conille, who also briefly led the country over a decade ago, had been appointed in May in the hope of restoring stability. In a letter circulating on social media, Conille criticized the council, saying it only had the power to appoint a prime minister and not to dismiss one. In recent weeks, Conille has embarked on trips abroad to the United Arab Emirates and Kenya to seek security assistance. Although the UN has authorized an international force to help Haiti's police take back control from the gangs, the mission has been poorly resourced and produced scant results. The UN's World Food Programme said last month that the total number of displaced people in Haiti was now more than 700,000.
Reuters correspondent Rachel Judah. This is VOA News. The trial of a police volunteer accused of raping and murdering a doctor at an Indian government hospital began on Monday. Reuters correspondent Alice Rizzo reports.
The murder sparked outrage and huge protests over the lack of safety for women in India. India's federal police said that the woman's body was found in a classroom at a hospital in Kolkata on August 9. Police volunteer Sanjay Roy was arrested for the crime, police said. Charges were drawn up last week. Roy said he was innocent and being framed, local media reported. The case has reignited criticism of India's poor record on women's safety, despite the introduction of tougher laws. It also shines a light on the poor infrastructure and security at government hospitals in India, many of which lack basic facilities, such as restrooms for doctors, CCTV cameras, and security personnel. India's federal police also arrested the officer in charge of the local police station and the superintendent of the hospital for allegedly tampering with evidence as well as financial irregularities.
Reuters correspondent Alice Rizzo. An immigration hardliner who served as a White House aide under former U.S. President Donald Trump has been appointed to a new position in the new Trump administration. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
Send the illegals back home.
Stephen Miller will be Donald Trump's deputy chief of policy. Miller was a central figure in previous policy decisions, including the separation of migrant children from their families in 2018. Campaigning with Trump in Colorado last month, Miller blamed the Democrats for an influx.
We don't need migrants consuming and depleting our public resources, overwhelming our public schools, overwhelming our hospitals, taking over our apartment buildings, and yes, murdering innocent Americans.
Since leaving the White House in 2021, Miller led the America First legal organization. I'm Jackie Quinn.
World War II veterans were honored on Monday at the National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. AP correspondent Shelley Adler reports.
The Veterans Day event paid tribute to the more than 16 million men and women who served during World War II. Edward Towns, now 103 years old, was one of those being honored. He served in the U.S. Army. His three brothers also served in various branches of the military.
It means everything to me, you know. I enjoy being here and I enjoy being with them.
Some veterans in attendance received a Greatest Generation commemorative coin and were part of the Parade of Heroes with a wreath laying at the memorial's Freedom Wall. I'm Shelley Adler.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Morning Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I am Chinedofo in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 12th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. There's anxiety in Nigeria's northern region as a new terror group begins the massive recruitment of youths.
This is something that we have been talking about. We have been informing the security agencies. There is an ongoing collaboration between ISWAP, Boko Haram, and bandits in the northwest and the north central.
And a prominent human rights group is calling for the deployment of peacekeepers in Sudan. And the United Nations Climate Summit of COP29 in Baku, Azerbaijan, African scientists and activists are calling for more assistance to adapt to climate change.
I am participating in COP for the first time. At the local level, we want to feel the decisions made internationally positively affecting our lives, and particularly those obviously related to climate change.
And observers ask if President-elect Trump will deliver on his campaign promises. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A prominent human rights group is calling for the deployment of peacekeepers in Sudan. This following a recent wave of attacks on civilians in Al Jazeera state, widely blamed on the Rapid Support Forces, one of the warring sides in Sudan's ongoing conflict. Human Rights Watch says the situation has become so grim that a mission is needed to protect the population. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
According to a local pro-democracy group, the World Madani Resistance Committee, 169 people have been killed since the violence started in southeastern Jazeera state on October 20th. The attacks began after a commander for the Rapid Support Forces defected and joined the Sudanese army. Rights group report that in response, RSF forces entered villages and towns in the area where the commander was from and carried out targeted killings and abuse. Leticia Bada is a deputy director of Human Rights Watch Africa Division. Bada says the violations have added more problems for our population, reeling from more than 18 months of war.
Sudanese women's rights groups have been documenting cases of sexual violence against women and girls in these towns and villages. And we're talking here about over 30 towns and villages which have been attacked in recent weeks. And these attacks are ongoing. So it's led to massive displacement of the civilian population in an area where people had already fled to and from. So it's just adding to the layers of suffering.
The RSF has denied attacking communities in Jazeera State and accuses Sudanese forces of arming local communities. The RSF and Sudan's military have been at war since April of last year. Rival generals led the parties and are locked in a power struggle. Meantime, Human Rights Watch and other observers are calling for the deployment of peacekeepers to Jazeera and other parts of Sudan in hopes of protecting civilians. Again, Leticia Bada.
Getting a presence on the ground which could play a role to deter further attacks on civilians, to monitor humanitarian obstruction, for example, is absolutely critical. But they would also obviously play a role in bolstering efforts on the ground, local ceasefire efforts, efforts by the emergency response rooms to provide assistance. But right now, the problem is that what is happening at the local level cannot act alone.
Ahmed Hashi, a Horn of Africa political and security commentator, says troops are needed and strong action needs to be taken against the leaders of the warring groups.
There is a need to send at least 3,000 United Nations soldiers. There is a need to take the criminal generals to the International Criminal Court and issue a warrant for their arrest. It is important for the United Nations to put its foot down on conflicts because they are going to metastasize into a massive humanitarian catastrophe.
In a report issued last month, the Office of UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said it was shocked by the human rights violations often witnessed in Sudan's Western Darfur region being repeated in Al Jazeera area. The United Nations Security Council is slated to discuss the report on Sudan later this month. Mohamed Yusuf, VA News, Nairobi.
Anxiety is mounting in northern Nigeria, including neighboring nations of Chad and Niger, following the emergence of a new lethal terror group known as Lakarawa. Security officials say the group is offering huge sign-on bonuses to youths, resulting in thousands of new recruits. Dr. Mohamed Sani Abubakar, a research fellow at the Department of Military Studies at the University of Abuja, told me Nigerian security agencies ignored actionable intelligence to confront the new threat.
This is something that we have been talking about. We have been informing the security agencies. There is an ongoing collaboration between ISWAP, Boko Haram, and bandits in the northwest and the north central. They have responded, well, I think their response was not good enough. I'm not surprised that they have been able to get support from Mali as well as Niger Republic to come into that very space in the northwest. And I think if that kind of thing can happen, it is because the level of resistance, pressure, the deterrence mechanism put in place by the government, be it the DSS, the military, the police, the civil authority, is not good enough to scare them off from coming to that space and to operate.
Reports indicate that some youths are flocking to this new terror organization. What is the attraction?
Money. That's what they use to lure the people. And that is why we have always been saying that bad governance is at the root cause of this. We claim to have a government in place, not made any provision for young people to give them jobs. I get them engaged via sports, via trades, via skill acquisition, farming, and so on and so forth. Many of them are idle. So if people like this come and they offer them something, it's easy to lure them and recruit them.
Do you think the emergence of this group is as a result of the success the Nigerian security agencies have recorded against IS and Boko Haram, or do you think the terror business is now so attractive that new players like this group just wants to join to carve out their own areas of authority?
Well, I would begin by saying yes and no. In the first place, from, let me just say, 2015 to 2021, 2022, thereabout, the Nigerian military and in general the entire security paraphernalia have been able to engage ISWAP as well as Boko Haram and the rest, and they effectively dealt with them. But over time, the momentum has not been maintained.
Some citizens I've spoken to from northern Nigeria say they now face a triple threat: Boko Haram, ISWAP or IS, and now this new group. So what is the security situation?
Well, to be candid, here in Borno, the northeastern part of the country, the people here have developed a sense of resilience over time. You know, this thing started far back 2009. Over time, they have developed a sense of resilience, and I don't think there is any attack by Boko Haram or ISWAP or anything that would really make people to submit to fear and all that. But you see, in the northwest, Sokoto, Kebbi, where this Lukarawa terrorist group has emerged, I think the terror level, the panic is high. And that is why you see even yesterday or so, the chief of army staff and the entire military high command went there. It's just to douse the tension. So in the northwest, to be honest, the tension is high. In fact, it might interest you to know that from Borno here, members of the civilian JTF have been moving to Katsina and Zamfara to help the state government, quasi-security paraphernalia, to engage the bandits.
That's Dr. Mohamed Sani Abubakar, a research fellow at the Department of Military Studies at the University of Abuja, speaking with me from Maiduguri, Borno State. The World Food Programme has warned that by 2025, about half of Nigeria's population may face severe food insecurity, rising prices, climate challenges, and growing insecurity in critical agricultural regions. Our reporter in Abuja, Nigeria, has more.
The report, released on November 7th, is part of the CADA Harmonized Food and Nutrition Insecurity Analysis, compiled by the Nigerian government in collaboration with the Food and Agriculture Organization, the World Food Programme, and UNICEF. The CADA Harmonized, or CH, is the unified tool for the consensual analysis of acute food and nutrition insecurity in the Sahel and West African region. It is an early warning tool developed upon request of stakeholders aimed at food and nutrition crisis prevention and management system. During the November 2024 presentation of the CADA Harmonized, or CH, analysis in Abuja, the country representative of the World Food Programme in Nigeria, Manuela Renfield, called for urgent adoption findings to guide intervention efforts.
The CH analysis plays a crucial role for assessing food insecurity. It identifies and compares specific vulnerabilities across Nigeria, capturing challenges related to conflict, displacement, economic hardship, and climate shocks. The CH analysis enables us to take informed decisions on where to spend and prioritize our resources. It helps justifying our targeting decisions to address the unique needs in the various states.
The projected hunger crisis is expected to worsen during Nigerians' lean season spanning June to August 2025. According to the CH report, approximately 5.4 million children and nearly 800,000 pregnant and breastfeeding women are at risk of acute malnutrition from the most affected states of Borno, Adamawa and Yobe, the northeast, as well as Sokoto, Katsina and Zamfara, the northwest. Yanusa Halilu is the National Secretary of the All Farmers Association of Nigeria. He told VOA that the alarming projection requires the government and stakeholders to act fast.
All from the beginning, we told the government that let's enhance productivity. Let's come together and think of mechanization, think of technology, think of security of the farmers in the rural areas, think of expanding farms. The government, they are playing politics in agriculture. We said it several times that, look, we don't play politics in food security. But today it has happened. United Nations have released this report and the government is looking at it. Nothing is done.
He emphasized that Nigeria's producing capacity is very low and the safety of farmers is not guaranteed due to the increasing rate of insecurity.
Everywhere in this country, if somebody tells you that the farmers are secure, it's a lie. Even we that we are farming, we don't go right inside a virgin land where you can do a very good production because you are, yeah, somebody will kidnap you and send you inside bush and be demanding millions when you don't even want it.
Halilu maintained that to avert the hunger projection, government must support the farmers by providing farm inputs, avoid selling off farm produce to neighboring countries, and solve the insecurity in the country to enable farmers farm without fear of being killed or kidnapped. This is VOA News in Abuja, Nigeria.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 12th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come, we'll be talking about the COP29. As the United Nations Climate Summit or COP29 gets underway in Baku, Azerbaijan, scientists and activists from Africa are calling for more assistance to adapt to climate change. A key focus of the conference will be finance. This as trillions of dollars are required for countries to drastically reduce greenhouse gas emissions and protect lives and livelihoods from the worsening impact of climate change. From the Kenyan capital, Ruben Chama reports.
World leaders gather in Baku, Azerbaijan, starting this week for the United Nations Climate Change Conference, known as COP29, where they will discuss how to secure adequate funds to respond to the climate crisis. But as the discussions get underway, climate scientists and activists are calling for more assistance to adapt to climate change. Payne Eulalia Marco is the executive director of Ujamaa Community Resource Team, UCRT, an environmental and social justice organization empowering marginalized indigenous groups in northern Tanzania.
I am participating in COP for the first time. At the local level, we want to feel the decisions made internationally positively affecting our lives, and particularly those obviously related to climate change. There is a need to identify, amplify, and scale local solutions that contribute in addressing climate change.
The gathering is being billed as the Finance COP, with leaders slated to explore how to live up to a 2023 pledge to transition away from fossil fuels and triple investments in renewable energy. Florence Gishoya is a spokesperson from the Alliance of Civil Society Organizations for Clean Energy Access, commonly known as Access Coalition.
When it comes to civil society organizations for energy access and just energy transition, we hope that this COP will build up from last year's COP, where more than 100 countries signed up to triple their renewable energy capacity and double their energy efficiency by 2030. We hope that the global community, especially the global north, will honor their commitments to financing, mitigation and adaptation efforts. We are falling short globally by about $100 billion.
UN officials said the conference will also be a key moment for countries to present their updated national climate action plans under the Paris Agreement, which are due by early 2025. Brian Omenyi is the Kenya-based coordinator of the Power Up campaign, which promotes renewable energy access as a climate action measure targeting frontline communities affected by the impact of climate change.
Developing countries like Kenya are concerned. We've seen developed countries are not honoring their commitments, even towards their 100 billion contributions. And we have seen continued worsening the impacts of climate change in developing countries. And therefore, we are really looking forward to a clear framework so that developing countries that really need this finance for adaptation are able to get it.
As climate impacts intensify and hit the world's most vulnerable hardest, a new report by the United Nations Environment Programme, UNEP, says that nations must dramatically increase climate adaptation efforts, starting with a commitment to act on finance at COP29. Inge Andersen is the executive director of the United Nations Environment Programme, or UNEP, at its headquarters in Nairobi, Kenya.
People are already dying, and homes and livelihoods are already being destroyed, and nature is already under assault. So it's clear that there is no choice but to adapt to that new climate reality. And that is why UNEP's Adaptation Gap Report 2024 calls for nations to dramatically increase to adapt to climate change, starting with a commitment on adaptation finance at the COP29 climate talks.
Andersen said the devastating drought in southern Africa, triggered by the El Nino weather phenomenon, had caused the region's worst hunger crisis in 100 years, a stark reminder of the brutal impact of the climate crisis. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Thank you, Ruben. Only three women were elected to Botswana's National Assembly in last week's general election, which saw power transfer to a different political party for the first time in 58 years. Women's rights activists have called on the new administration to increase female representation in Botswana's politics. Mkondisi Dube reports from the capital, Gaborone.
The three women elected were among 28 female candidates contesting for National Assembly seats. Helen Manyeneng of the new ruling party, the Umbrella for Democratic Change, UDC, is one of the three female members of parliament in the 61-seat assembly. The UDC defeated the Botswana Democratic Party, which had held power since the country gained independence in 1966. Manyeneng says women face many challenges, including poverty, in their efforts to win political office.
We women, we are so overwhelmed by poverty. We are having very low socioeconomic status in Botswana as women. The past government showed no political will to assist. I think as a newly elected MP, female elected MP, I'm going to advocate for women economic empowerment.
Botswana's previous general elections in 2019 also saw only three women elected to parliament. Manyeneng says the patriarchal nature of society, where men have greater control over money and decision-making, restricts female participation in politics.
Women, they're so interested. Women can. And the issue is, who's supposed to elevate them? Who's supposed to assist them? And again, if you allow yourself to be under a man, I mean, somebody who's assisting you financially as a man, he will not allow you to stand for political position. A majority of men, when they just want to control, they don't want to be controlled, or they don't want to share that control with you.
The regional non-profit organization GenderLinks released a report on Botswana before the October 30 election, which raised concern about missing women's voices in politics. GenderLinks consultant Pamela Dube says Botswana has done too little to empower women.
It's a sad situation. It's been like this for a very long time. 58 years later, we only have 3 women in parliament. We have spoken, you know, greatly of what are the reasons really behind this being a patriarchal society that we are in Botswana that does not believe women can, you know, lead, particularly in areas like politics.
Dube says Botswana's electoral system presents an impediment to women who want to run for office.
GenderLinks has done a lot of work around that. That shows that the countries that advance are still holding on to the electoral, the past, first past the post electoral system, have less and less women in political office. Whereas the countries that have adopted the proportional representation, you know, is managing to get women in political office.
On Wednesday, newly elected President Dumaboko used a special dispensation to name 3 more women to the National Assembly.
We wanted to reach out throughout the year as possible to bring in young women, in particular with skills and visibility in society. And then, of course, we had to look at increasing the number of women.
The special appointments mean Botswana's parliament has 8.9% female representation, still well below the Southern African Development Community target of 30%. Kondisi Dube, VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
Chad's army says Boko Haram insurgents killed 17 Chadian soldiers in a weekend attack on a military post that left 96 of the assailants dead in the country's west. The attack in the Lake Chad region happened on Saturday. Army spokesperson General Isaac Achiki said on national television. The Associated Press says he did not provide details. The Lake Chad region has been plagued this year by frequent attacks from insurgents, including Boko Haram, an Islamic State in West Africa. It had revived fears of violence after a period of peace following a successful operation launched in 2020 by the Chadian army to destroy the extremist group's bases. Last month, 40 soldiers were killed during an attack on a military base, prompting President Mahamat Idrissa Itno to launch an operation to dislodge Boko Haram militants from Lake Chad. In March, an attack the government blamed on Boko Haram killed 7 soldiers. In politics, Donald Trump's agenda calls for him to deliver on key campaign talking points, border security, strengthening the economy and putting America first. While his promises are bold, details on how they'll be carried out are few. Tina Trin reports.
It is now clear that we've achieved the most incredible political thing. Look what happened. Is this crazy?
As it became evident on election night that Donald Trump would once again become U.S. president, he gave a victory speech in which he reiterated his agenda for the next 4 years. Border security remains a top priority. Trump has said that he will launch the largest deportation program of criminals in American history and has called for the death penalty for any migrant who kills an American citizen or law enforcement officer. The tough talk was less evident on election night. It's less clear how the new administration will accomplish its economic goals without adding to an already growing deficit. But Trump's speech mentioned a person who might help, tech mogul Elon Musk, who Trump has said would lead a government efficiency commission. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
And that's it for this Tuesday, November 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We're also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the entire Daybreak crew, I'm Chinedu Ofor in Washington, wishing that you would have a great day.